Hey, Mark, you on?
I sure am. How are you?
Good. I couldn't hear you last time, so we had to redo it.
Gotcha.
Cool. Well, welcome everybody to our new podcast here called Fortify Your Life. My name is Matthew Noble. I am a retired trainer, and this is my good friend, mentor, and colleague, Mark McCoy. And Mark is what I call a superhero in the health and fitness industry, but he's a retired trainer as well. Amazing guy, definitely knows his stuff. And he's also the proactive healthcare director for MDVIP. So we're really excited to bring a lot of amazing education and information and some perspective to you guys. We're going to talk about a variety of different things throughout the different episodes of the show, but today we figured we'd start easy and talk about a topic that has a lot of confusion around the world. There's a lot of do this, don't do that type of confusion, and a lot of people don't know what to do. So we're going to talk about that word, the four-letter word, diet and dieting, and we're going to kind of get into some basic foundational stuff. But Mark, can we just go ahead and jump into this thing, man? So what is a diet? Can we just define what dieting even is?
Honestly, it kind of depends on who you're talking to as to what they view it. Some people just think diet is just your nutrition, and they would be correct and say that that's your dieting. But some people believe it's the plan that they use to lose weight is their. And I just the understanding of the health and fitness industry, and I'll just pose the question out there. If anybody realizes, if I were to ask the question, just to raise your hands, everybody, obviously I can't see you on the podcast, but in my seminars, when I ask if you would like to create weight loss, raise your hand. Okay, great. Now, if I were to ask who would like to create fat loss, raise your hand. And this is where the confused looks and the hands go halfway up and they start figuring out, well, there is a major difference in weight loss to fat loss. You know, weight can be anything. I always joke that if you want to be lighter, cut your arm off. But if you want to be leaner, just target the fat. So if you go to a weight loss clinic, you go to certain places that teach you how to restrict calories and not necessarily care too much about the content, although they say you should be eating healthier, but it's more about just calories in to calories out, forgetting that there is a quality component and still the lean body mass, and your body is constantly needing to repair cells and constantly feed the machine and keep the body healthy. There is a certain requirement of nutrients that the body needs, and it has a certain amount that it needs daily. So there's a philosophy is a big thing, and terminology does have a difference. So don't always assume is my biggest statement, is never assume you know what it is. Ask a few more questions and you'll get to the root of the philosophy you're talking about. And then you can actually ask for what you really want and see if it fits. If it doesn't fit, and that's
awesome.
That's my quick intro to it. Just remember the first three letters of the word diet is die. So be cautious who you're talking to.
Yeah,
could be accelerated aging.
Yeah, we're not looking to do any dying. It's the term diet. Yeah, I say that to a lot of people too. I love to see their reaction when I say that. So let's talk about a few of the things. And there's, I don't even know, hundreds of different types of diets. Some of the more popular ones out there, like the one that's out there right now, that's kind of the big deal, the keto diet or the ketogenic diet. Can you kind of give us an idea of what that is?
Yeah, it's basically saying that, you know, out of the energy sources, we're going to eliminate the one that is carbohydrates and sugars and allow the body to use the proteins to feed the muscles so that your lean body mass doesn't get lysed or eaten by the body being in a catabolic state. It's not using your muscle as energy. If you look at the physique of an endurance athlete, where they generally look a little more gaunt and emaciated, that they're getting too thin. The body is using lean mass as energy. They're below what's called a basal metabolic rate, or with exercise, an anabolic threshold. There's calculations for how to figure that out and ballpark it for people. But really what you're looking at is you want to make sure you save your lean mass and just target the fat as energy. And if you have quality proteins and healthy fats in your diet, then your body says, well, if I'm not going to get these carbs and sugars, I'm going to switch over to these fats you have in the diet. And you're generally eating all proteins and fats in ketogenic dieting. the body starts to flip from sugar to fat as energy. Once you're in the lipid system or the fat system, your body will stay in the fat system. So after the threshold of the liver using food source energy at about 18 minutes, you'll notice if you've ever done cardio, about 20 minutes in, you get a second wind, that your body tapping into a possible reserve. If you don't have the sugars in your diet and you're not in the glycogen system or sugar system, sorry, I'll try to stay in layman's terms here, then your body will use the fat system. So after 18 to 20 minutes, the second wind is your body going from food, fat source energy to body stored fat energy. And that way your body taps into it without tapping into your muscle. Okay. There's some validity to it. There's some elements in there, but if I could, being this our first podcast, we was talking about the dieting world, and I'd love to give about a 10,000 foot view of this whole thing real quick and kind of narrow it down, and then we can get back into the more specific kind of diet.
Sure. Cool?
Yeah, appreciate
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Really think about the health and fitness industry as two phases, health and fitness. There's three words we're looking at there, health and fitness. The most important word is and. First, get healthy, then add exercise. So let's take that 10,000 foot view of health and fitness and boil it down to the next phase of the three phases of health and fitness is boiled down. There's two steps in health. One is rebalancing the body. Also in biology, people learn this word homeostasis, a true state of balance. But if your body's out of balance, and there's so many different markers, whether you're looking at blood work or blood pressure or body composition or whatever marker you're looking at, if you're not in the healthy range, it's considered out of balance. So the goal is to get the body's efficiency back first, then make sure the nutrition matches your goal weight. We always say you should be feeding the body you want, you're hydrating the body you have. And so there's a little formula for each of those things. And that's what we're talking about in the dieting is the second phase here. Not necessarily the balancing part, but we are definitely talking about the nutrition part. What do I feed the body once it's back in balance? And there's a certain amount of the healthy versions that are out there, the healthy foods. So fruits and vegetables, quality proteins, your healthy fats, you're getting the right levels or numbers of them for the weight you want to weigh. And that is what's called macro counting. And then the third phase goes into the fitness. So you've got balance, feed, and move. And that's where you add exercise to the healthy individual. So when you get into the steps, there's actually eight steps in predictable change. There's four in balance, two in nutrition, and two in fitness, giving you the phasing of each step into the eight steps of predictable and sustainable change. So technically, if you start with your diet plan, getting back full circle to where we're starting our conversation here today, if you're dealing with macro counts or philosophy, you're actually starting with step five, the fifth step of the eight steps when you're looking at what is the checklist of things you go through. And what I mean by the checklist is a proactive approach to healthcare. What are the things that we deal with on a daily basis before I ever step foot into a medical office for a need or a want of a problem, which is a symptoms down approach? Proactive healthcare is the foundation up approach. And this is just our daily habits. What are we as individuals responsible for? But the dieting world is basically starting with step five. They all have different philosophies. They're not wrong. They're just different. So if you are a pescatarian, a vegetarian, or your paleolithic diet, or you are ketogenic dieting, you could be all meats and fats to all vegetables and grains. And you never know what that person's philosophy is, but that doesn't change the numbers you're supposed to have for your goal weight. How many grams of protein, carbs, and fat is required for the body. Your sources may be a little different. Your gaps may be a little different. So you may have to supplement some things if you're not getting it in a certain meal plan. But you still have to get to these numbers. You still want to be feeding the body you want. And technically, that's quality, balanced nutrition.
Oh, definitely. Now, I'm not by any means, I'm not a ketogenic diet connoisseur. I believe it has a place if there's a medical need. But I think as far as the average person that typically does it for fat loss, I don't see it being a very sustainable long-term thing. And I know that there's there's data on this side and that side saying it's great. This side says it's bad. does, you know, bad things with your cholesterol. And I think it's always an individual thing, but when we're talking about getting the right amount of proteins, fats, and carbs, and looking at things, and we're not trying to beat up on keto, we're just identifying some things because it's kind of the hot fad. And truth be told, keto, as far as a methodology, is nothing new. It's just been renamed and repackaged. But from what I've seen, the current ketogenic diet is about 80% fats, 20% protein, or 70% fats and 20% protein, or something like that, and like 5 or 10% carbs. So if somebody's consuming 80% of their calories from fat alone, knowing that their muscle tissue to sustain itself needs protein, and they're only eating, you know, on average 40 to 60 grams of protein a day, how's that going to affect their muscle tissue when they're losing fat, or will it?
Yeah, I don't know that those ratios are dead on accurate in how some people are taught it, because like you're right. I mean, Atkins used to be all protein and fats and low carbs, so it was the Atkins diet before it was popular as ketogenic. But yeah, ratios depend on which source you're looking at. It could be, you know, 50-50 protein to fats and stuff, but you're right, it's calories, not necessarily grams. But
I mean, the typical thing I see of people that are doing keto, or they're following that, what has been perceived as the outline to the ketogenic diet, which is a ridiculous amount of fat and moderate protein and very low carb.
The carb is the contributing factor, and then how many grams of protein is going to be based on the goal weight of the person, and then the ratio to the fat would be based off of that original protein intake. But you know, you're dealing with one of the specific diet plans. There's nothing wrong with it. Like I said, they all have their place, they all have their person. There's so many factors that have to go into somebody choosing what plan they're looking at before they decide, because you know, what is the goal? Is this person trying to gain weight and play a sport, and they're trying to put on 25-30 more pounds of muscle? Is this person trying to drop 100 pounds of body fat? Is this person working with a doctor and they're dealing with health issues and they're trying to stave off some illnesses and they need to watch the intake? You know, that's why there's professionals out there, and we don't claim to be doctors or cure, treat, prevent any disease. There's our big disclaimer that we are just advocates of health. We work with the proactive approach, and we are open to any and all programs based on what is recommended by the professional. But I'll guarantee you that if you're taking your proactive approach into your hands, you're just doing a good strategy that starts from that foundation. It works its way up. A lot of times, most people don't realize how much junk is in our food. You kind of start with a cleanse and detox and get the junk out before you start putting the good in. And if you get that correct and you're not doing stripping agents and magnesium citrates and not doing proper rebuilds, then you're good. You've got the right balance. Then you can move into putting the things back into your body in the order of their importance. And that is why there's the steps. And you just kind of look at that stuff. But, you know, there's so much out there. And, you know, you can walk into a health food store and grab 5 different books and not a one of them agrees with each other. And a lot of people get frustrated because of the misinformation. And statistically, you know, we've had discussions about this at different seminars and things we've done together. And I think it's amazing how since the 1960s, where there was about 32% of the population that was overweight or obese, to now, to the 2018, where you're listening to statistical data saying over 66% of Americans are overweight or obese. And it happens to be the exact same time frame that the health and fitness industry became super popular, was from the 60s till now. Why is the obesity rates going through the roof and doubling at the same time that the health and fitness industry doubled?
Yeah, that's definitely crazy. That this, what's funny is there's really no correlation there. There's no indicators that those two things are synonymous, and yet they keep growing, or they keep changing simultaneously. It's pretty incredible.
You're absolutely right, and I want to make a point on that. Correlation does not mean causation.
That's very true. That is
so
very true.
Correlation, remember, less than 20% of the American population actually utilizes a health and fitness strategy and lifestyle. Most people, 66% of Americans, pretty much in the last studies I've seen, need to get off the couch. They don't do much of anything, so they use the convenience diet.
Yeah, I think it's at 68 or higher now. I want to say 70, I heard, but I don't know if that's verified or not. But 68 was the last actual
actual number I heard. It's an alarming rate, to say the least. Let's put it that way.
Just being put in half is scary enough.
Yeah, exactly. And guys, that's caused by one real main factor, and that's convenience, because we're all busy and we're making poor choices for the sake of time because we're rushing home from work and we've got to get home and watch the third season of Daredevil and, you know, those types of things. And so we're not making good choices and we're not necessarily being active or, you know, any of the types of things that we know that we really need to be doing. And you know, now is a really good time to get started on that. I mean, right now is always the best time. If you're listening to this, you know, tonight, tomorrow, or 6 months from now, right now is the best time to get started. And you know, I wanted to kind of just touch on something too, because when you were talking about, we kind of got into calories a little bit, you know, and a lot of times we hear with a lot of diets, different methodologies and things like that, calories in, calories out, calories a calorie. But you know what, and truth be told, most people don't even know what a calorie really is. Can you kind of give us some light on that and kind of expound on what calories are and how they really should be used?
Sure. Well, technically, in the medical sense, that a calorie is a measurement of energy output, and they want to know, can you raise 15 degrees Celsius temperature water to 16 degrees, so 1 degree increase, and it takes one calorie will give you that temperature increase. So it's the measurement. But you know, honestly, that, you know, a protein or a carb is 4 calories per gram, and fat has an average 9. But you're looking at a measurement of energy output. But that's a medical definition. As far as the general public's concerned, they don't care about that. They care, do I lose 15 pounds if I burn more calories than I take in? And that's not necessarily true. You may lose weight if you burn more calories than you take in, but you don't know what weight it will be unless you have met certain requirements. Number one, be efficient. Number two, quality, and then quantity. Your body needs to make sure it gets enough nutrients that says, I no longer need to search for these things to repair or heal my body or create the energies I need. So therefore, I can raise back up my metabolism rather than always looking to store things. You know, a calorie is not a calorie, by the way, in the public sense. It is only in the medical sense. And I can give you an example. I'm pretty sure a glazed donut and a chicken breast don't do the same thing in your body. Pretty sure. So if you had all 2,000 calories in glazed donuts, I'm pretty sure your body's still saying, but I need iron and I need vitamin A and I need calcium and I need all of these nutrients are still not in my body. So your metabolism slows down, says, please go get me more of those. So yeah, your metabolism slowing down, but you have 2,000 calories of glazed donuts coming into your body. It just takes that, stores it over here, and still goes out looking for things. You know, so quality does matter.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we've seen where there's been some changes in certain studies. I can't remember the guy, he did a Twinkie diet or something like that. And, you know, his numbers improved, his blood panels and things improved, and he was eating nothing but, you know, simple carbohydrates, Twinkies, sugars, things like that. But at the end of the day, and this is true throughout any, you know, any type of diet, and you know, we don't necessarily subscribe to being on diets. What we you know, advocate is just getting on proper nutrition and staying there. That way there's really no need to diet. But you know, at the end of the day, why most of these things work, whatever, you know, diet program is at the end of the day, it's a caloric deficit. And, you know, that has a certain range to it. Mark, can you kind of enlighten us on what that calorie range is? Because a lot of times people say, well, just eat less and work out more. And, you know, some people go way beyond and they think, well, all right, I'm just going to eat less. I'm going to eat, you know, 800 calories a day and I'm going to lose weight like crazy. And unfortunately, that's not really the way to lose weight.
Right. And you can always take something to the nth degree and figure out if it's truly logical. But if calories were your enemy, you should be the healthiest person on the planet if you never ate.
Yeah.
We know that's not true. So now we have to say, okay, well, if there's a magic number, what's the magic number for someone? And, you know, not to get too scientific into the details, but you can use MyFitnessPal or a BMR app or something. You can find out your basal metabolic rate by putting in a few factors, and it'll just spit you out the number that's pretty darn accurate. It's within 100 calories one way or another of your basal metabolic rate, which is life-sustaining function. This is just for you to sit in a chair for 24 hours. You're going to need a certain number of calories, but those calories have to be quality. You know, you can't eat junk. So when you're eating quality fruits, vegetables, quality proteins, healthy fats, and you're getting the right balance of fiber, you're getting your body to utilize this nutritious food. It does need to be above the BMR. If you are exercising, it needs to be above the BMR plus EPOC. EPOC is excess post-oxygen consumption. It's about a 20% bump over the BMR. It just means it needs this additional nutrients to repair from the resistance training. And so high output exercise requires repair. So you have what's called an anabolic threshold. The two bottom factors is your BMR and your EPOC. So you're sitting there with this base, and my BMR is just about 2,000 calories a day just to sit in a chair. So if I were to go to the gym and train for 45 minutes, do some resistance training, or if I played a game of ice hockey or something, which is my sport, I know that there's going to be an EPOC effect. There's going to be a 20% bump for 2 days, 48 hours for repair and replenishment of the tissue, repair and remodeling. So I'm at about 2,400 as my anabolic threshold. But I may be burning upwards with my other two factors of lifestyle, what my daily activity looks like, and then the amount of exercise caloric burn I had during my training. So if my 45 minutes of weights, it was in the morning and I played a hockey game that night, I knew I had an hour and a half on the ice and at least a half an hour in the gym, if not 45 minutes to an hour. I'm two and a half hours of exercise. There could have been 1,000 calorie burn between those. So that 1,000 calorie burn is in addition to my, say, 600, 650 from lifestyle. So I had a 1,600 calorie above that. That put me at 4,000. That's a pretty typical day for me. So my sweet spot is between 2,400 and 4,000. So if I'm trying to get leaner, let's say I eat 3,000 calories in a day, but I'm burning 4. I know I have above the anabolic threshold of quality to feed my lean mass, bones, muscles, organs, brain, but I don't have enough to feed all my energy output. So my body does not tap into my muscles and all that. So it keeps me lean and strong, but I had a 1,000 calorie deficit a day. And if there's 3,500 calories and a pound of body fat stored on the body, I know that every 3.5 days, I will burn 1 pound of body fat. Because I turned off the sugar. I didn't eat junk, refined sugars and sweets in my diet. I turned off the glycemic load of any of the pastas and breads and things that could turn to sugar. So I got rid of short-term energy from food, long-term energy from food, from the carbohydrates. But I maintained the vegetables, the salads as 80% of my food intake, and low glycemic things like fruits that would be low glycemic, like strawberry, watermelon, something like that. But I maintained good possible, like a sweet potato, oatmeal, and those were about 20% of the diet, 80% fruits and or vegetables and salads, and then 20% the fruits and grain. But I kept the glycemic index low. But the rest was my proteins and my fats. I maintained the quality levels, and my lean mass said thank you. My body fat said uh-oh. My body just switched to the fat as energy, and I burn a pound of fat off every 3.5 days or 2 pounds a week.
That's awesome. Now, you just brought up glycemic index. Okay, so you got to tell us what that means, because I think so many people get into this, you know, anti-carb, and they think carbs make you fat, and they don't know that there's a difference between carbs, and they don't know simple sugars, complex carbs, fibrous carbs, all that stuff. What's the glycemic index? I'm sure we're going to have some people that are dealing with diabetes or something like that, and this is really important stuff. So what does that even mean?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just say, if you are dealing with any kind of medical illness, consult with your medical professional, consult with your doctor, get the recommendations from them. This is not a replacement for them in any way, shape, or form. This is just our opinions as advocates of health, that we are on a proactive approach here. I cannot stress this enough. We believe in taking control of your health on your daily habits, but you got to have some guideposts. And these are those guideposts. So glycemic index, it's a great question. We get it a lot at the public seminars, but it's the amount of insulin response from the carbohydrate or the sugar. So if something has a very high response for the different types of sugars, you may see something like dextrose, and you want to create an insulin response. That's why they have these tablets that are dextrose tablets, to create that insulin response. You may have something that is sucrose, which is the table sugar. That is the standard that they base everything off of. Something is a standardized glycemic index. It's based on sucrose. Dextrose is higher. And then you may have something like crystalline fructose, types of fruit sugars that are very low glycemic index, that may be like a strawberry. So, you know, if you're using crystalline fructose as a sweetener in something, you would have to divide by three. So if it said 12 grams of sugar, it's actually four on the glycemic index. So you're dealing with the insulin response. Is it manageable and below the threshold of spiking and valleying, where it's non-manageable?
And what is that guideline typically, under 6 grams per meal?
6 grams per meal, you got it, based on sucrose, the center line, yes.
Awesome. So that gives you guys a little bit of a guideline. So, you know, throughout this episode or this show, you know, we've touched on a lot of subtopics that we're going to go a little bit more in depth into in future episodes. But listen, we're going to jump off of here. We're going to run. Thanks for jumping on. Thanks for joining. If you guys have any input, any questions, go ahead and leave us a message through the app. You're listening through it. You can go ahead and leave us a voicemail and we can get back to you. You know, we're really